Will Duke and Daisy's retirement spending plan work? If you're a fan of hearing Joe and Big Al debate, you're in luck today on Your Money, Your Wealth podcast number 475, as they disagree on assumptions when it comes to retirement planning. The EasyRetirement.com calculator says Chuck in South Carolina could convert even more to Roth, and the fellows spitball on the pros and cons. Plus, what should Chuck's asset allocation be for his daughters? And how should Scott in Kansas City's parents allocate their assets? Can Rothaholic undo his Roth conversion? Brian Fantana and his wife are in their 30s and want to retire at 60. Are they on track? Ricky in Alabama wants to avoid Medicare's IRMA, or income-related monthly adjustment amount. Should he spend from his IRA or from his Roth? Daniel in Whittier wants to know what exactly counts for IRMA income anyway. And finally, Elisa in Fremont wants to know, with the new Secure Act 2.0 rules, when can you transfer 529 college savings funds to Roth? I'm producer Andy Last, and here are the hosts of Your Money, Your Wealth, Joe Anderson, CFP, and Big Al Klopine, CPA.
All right. We got a lot of questions here today, and some of them are really long, so I'm just going to do what's FYI or announcement
okay.
to our listeners.
Announcement, yep.
For your PSA.
PSA, there you go. Thank you, Andy.
Yeah.
Yes. Can we count them down a little bit? I'm reading for like pages and pages, and I've tried to listen to this show, and it's absolutely terrible. So we're going to abbreviate some of this stuff. So if we kind of edit your email, that is the reason.
Yeah. Actually, a perfect length would be set it to font size 14 and do half a page.
Oh, God.
Al, you can't read a font size 14.
I'm saying I don't want one page where it's an 8 font because right. It's like 3 pages.
All right. Yep. Here we go. We got hello, YMYW team. Duke and Daisy here from Charlotte, North Carolina. We found your podcast about a year ago. Enjoy listening to the spitball retirement planning questions. Would you please do a little spitballing for us? Of course we will. Big Duke, he drives a 2018 Toyota Highlander and enjoys an occasional porter or stout. I drive a 2016 Toyota Avalon and enjoy sweet tea. Oh, Charlotte, North Great. Carolina. It's a little tea with a ton of sugar in it.
Sure.
Duke and I hope to retire in 3 years when I'll be 63 and Duke will be 65. All right, we currently have $800,000 in pre-tax retirement accounts, $110,000 in after-tax investment accounts. All right, so $900,000.
Right.
Duke earns $105,000 per year, and he puts 12% into the 401k. Daisy earns $65,000 a year, and she puts $2,000 into a brokerage account per month. I will receive a pension at 65 of $12,000 a year. But she wants to retire at 63, right?
Yes.
All right, so we got a little bridge going on.
Yep.
The plan is to take Social Security at 67. All right, so she's working. She wants to retire at 63. She's got some income at 65 and then some more income at 67. I see where this question might be going.
I think so, too.
All right, so she'll get $40,000 or $35,000 a year. Duke plans on taking his Social Security at age 70. So he's got a five-year bridge, which is anticipated to be around $50,000 a year. We are blessed to be debt-free, including our home, which is worth approximately $600,000. They need $100,000 to spend annually.
Right.
All right. So if they retire in 3 years, their concern is that the withdrawal rate for those years before Social Security and pensions is going to be a little bit too high. So in 3 years now, they're going to have $1 million.
Yeah.
And so they want to spend $100,000. They will have no fixed income in 3 years, correct?
Yeah, I guess the first fixed income is $12,000. That'd be 2 years after Daisy retires. So there's something. Then 2 years later, she'll get her Social Security at that point, and Duke maybe 1 year after that. So there's different time frames. So
if you combine the fixed income, so let's just call it 50, 60, 70, 80, 90. They'll have roughly about $100,000 of fixed income once Duke turns 70.
Correct.
So we have to bridge a gap to Duke's age 70.
Right.
And so they're going to work. He's going to work until 65, and she's going to work until 63. There's going to be some added expenses for her because she's 63. She probably needs medical.
Right.
So what is the dilemma is that they could blow through their portfolio fairly quickly.
Right.
Even though they'll have a lot of fixed income down the road.
Yeah. So let's kind of put a little math together here. If you just look at that what they'll probably end up with based upon what they're saving at a 6% rate of return over 3 years, they'll probably have about 1.2 million.
1.2, okay. Instead of
okay. And they're, as you say, they're spending about 100, maybe it'll be 107. We'll call it 110. We'll just round it because of inflation, right?
Okay.
So 110 into 1.2. So we're looking at about a 9% distribution rate, which is, as you've heard from the show, it's too high.
Right.
But it's temporarily a 9% until the fixed income comes.
For 3 years.
For 3 years. So I guess the way I might think about this is if you got a 9% distribution rate and if your portfolio earns 6%, then you're basically losing 3% a year. So 3% on 1.2 million, what's that? Well, I'll just round it up to 35,000. Let's call it they lose 100,000 in 3 years. So that, I mean, you want to see how much your portfolio you're going to be missing, right? And so by the time then that they've got, let's call it 1.1 million because they've used their portfolio, does it still work? And the answer is yes, it does, because there's a lot of fixed income.
I totally disagree.
Okay, what do you got?
Totally disagree, because if they're spending $110,000, right? So 3 years, they have no fixed income. So they're going to spend $300,000, $350,000 from the portfolio. And then from there, from her age.
You're forgetting the growth on the portfolio.
You can't assume growth, Alan. That's the problem with people. I think there's so much overconfidence in people when it comes to their retirement.
Well,
if it's negative 10% or 20%.
All right. Well, you didn't let me finish.
Okay. All right. We'll go.
Okay. Good. So, I mean, so that's what the math would indicate, that this works. Now, if you the sequence of returns
is going to blow them up.
If it happens.
But we don't know that. So they got to hedge for that risk, right?
Yeah. So if you let me follow through, then what I would say is, me personally, I would want to actually lower my expenses for a few years or have some part-time income to try to mitigate that risk.
I think they'll have to pull out $400,000 or $500,000 from the portfolio. They got 1.2. They're going to pull out almost half of their portfolio.
You're way off.
How am I way off?
Because you're assuming a zero to negative return. I mean, if you assume that,
if it's
then why do we even assume a 6% rate of return when we do these calculations?
What I'm saying is that I think where people get overconfident in their overall retirement is that we're just talking back of the envelope math, and I
right.
cannot assume a 6% growth rate. There's no way. I would not retire. I would not do this. Because if the market turns 10% in 1 year, I don't think they make it. I mean, they could live off their fixed income, but they might have to go back to work, or they're going to blow out of all of their liquid assets potentially.
Right. I don't disagree with that. So what I'm saying,
okay.
tried to say, is I think if you use a 6% rate of return, it can work. I'm not completely comfortable with that, though, just because of the problems with the market, and it's hard to count on it. So if it were me, I would have part-time income, I would reduce my expenses, or I might work a couple more years.
What's the total dollar amount that has to come from the portfolio? What's the demand for the portfolio? It's got to be close to $500,000.
Well, okay, so for 5 years, yeah, $500,000.
Right, well, you've got 3 years of $100,000, and then they have a $12,000 buffer for
yeah.
a couple years until
and then
you know, she's got Social Security of 30 and then
that'll be 4 years
70
in.
Right
yeah so
if you add up I guess all of those shortfalls, I'm guessing it's over 500,000.
Yeah, at a zero growth,
0% growth rate.
yeah
so then I don't know, that seems, could there be a possibility that they get a 0% growth rate over 5 years?
Sure. I mean, but when we do financial plans for our clients, we assume a 6% rate of return.
For a 30-year time period.
Sure.
You got to bridge a gap of 5 years. You cannot assume a 6% growth rate over a 3 or 4 year period, I don't think. Because when you're looking at taking income from a portfolio, don't we want to have at least so much money in cash or treasuries
okay.
or fixed income?
Okay, well then let's go to yours. Okay, so we have 1.2 million. Now we got 700,000. But their fixed income almost covers their expenses, so who cares?
Okay, the math will work.
Right.
But do you think they would stick with that plan?
In what respect?
Okay, that $1.2 million goes to $500,000.
It goes to $700,000.
$700,000.
Yeah.
Do you think they'd stick with it?
I wouldn't. I would go back to work.
Right. I know, they would freak out.
All I'm saying, though, is if their fixed income mostly covers their expenses, they don't need the $1.2 million.
After age 70.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, I just did your math,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, all right. So if the, I mean, it could go down to 100,000, it doesn't matter according to the math, because their Social Security and their pension
just about covered
is going to cover their living expenses.
Now, would I be happy with that? No, I mean, I would go back to work if that happened, but mathematically, chances are they'll be at a rate of return. You can't really count on that. But if you take the worst case, zero, you know, full draw from the portfolio, I think it still works because of their fixed income.
I think that's the reason why they probably wrote in. I wouldn't do it. There's no way.
To get us fired up. I would do it with the thought that I would need to figure out some part-time income during a few, maybe at least the first couple of years.
Or cut your spending in half. That sounds like fun.
I wouldn't cut it in half, but I might bring it down a bit.
When you shift from saving for retirement to spending in retirement, your financial strategies need to change too. Download the Withdrawal Strategy Guide from the podcast show notes and learn how to identify the most efficient plan for when and where your retirement income will come from, and which tax smart tools allow you to keep more of what you've earned and give less of it to the IRS. Just click the link in the description of today's episode in your favorite podcast app, go to the show notes, and download the Withdrawal Strategy Guide for free. You can also quickly spitball your own retirement readiness just by clicking the free retirement calculator link there in the show notes.
Hi, Andy. Joe, Big Al, new listener. Love the show. Well, thank you very much. Chuck, he's from South Carolina.
Okay.
My wife, two daughters, and a dog. We all live in South Carolina. I drive a 2021 Ford F-150. My wife, 2022 Palisade. My oldest daughter, she drives a Jeep Wrangler. What's a Palisade? It seems like a bigger truck.
I would guess.
If he's got a Ford F-150.
Yeah.
Palisade.
Yeah, I would think it's, I don't know.
It's a Hyundai.
Hyundai Palisade.
Is it a big one?
Waiting for the picture to load. One moment, please.
All right.
Oh, yeah, it's an SUV.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
My wife, she sips on a little Sauvignon Blanc. And I enjoy just about everything. Oh, Chuck.
Chuck.
Yeah.
Chuck. Didn't we go to college with Chuck?
We might have. My wife and I are 46, and we just retired late last year. Wow. 46, Al, retired. What are you going
to
do?
I'm late to the game.
We spend about $150,000 a year, and we have the following. Okay, 46, y'all. $50,000 in HSAs, $220,000 in 529 plans, $450,000 in inherited IRA, $1.2 million in a traditional IRA, $1.3 million in Roth IRAs, and $1.4 million in taxable accounts. Jeez. How do you accumulate $4.6 million at age 46?
I don't know. I'd say that's quite a success story.
That is phenomenal. All right. He's got a couple questions for us, Al. First,
okay.
Would you guys do a little spitballing for us?
No, why do you guys only spitball?
No. Why do you guys spitball only doing Roth conversions up to the 22 or 24% tax brackets?
Okay.
Well, because the math makes sense usually.
Yep.
But I'll read on.
Let's see what his comment is. Okay.
When I run the awesome tool on easyretirement.com. Oh, he liked the little easy retirement.
Yeah.
I actually save about $20,000 in taxes if I convert all of the traditional IRA over the Roth in 2 years, reaching the 35% tax bracket versus doing it slowly at $225,000 a year over 7 years at a 24% tax bracket, which has me paying tax on nearly $1.6 million and not just the $1.2 million that's in the account today. Seems like some folks are overemphasizing tax bracket and less on tax dollars. So here's the pro and con of this statement.
Yes.
Is when you play with calculators, it's going to run a certain rate of return. And I'm not sure what Chuck ran. So the faster you convert, the more compounding is going to happen in the Roth IRA. If you keep the money in the IRA at the same rate of return and convert to whatever bracket, you're going to have more money compounding in the IRA and you're trying to get that money out. So you have actually more money in IRA that you potentially will pay more taxes on.
That's correct.
So that's why the calculator is telling you that could be a better idea. However, you might want to be careful.
Yes, because there's something called the present value of money. And when you look at paying taxes today, it's more expensive than paying those same dollars in the future. And here's why. I'll try to be simple. If you think about investing a dollar, and in 10 years, that dollar is worth $2, this works in reverse, right? The $2 that you have 10 years from now, spend 2 years from now, is like spending a dollar today. It for the same principle, right? So you just have to look at when you're paying the taxes and how this all works. It's not just a raw number. You have to look at when those payments were made.
But there is a lot of benefit to him converting, ripping out the Band-Aid. The guy's got $4.6 million at 46, and he's going to have several years of compounding tax-free growth at 35%. I mean, he's going to pay 35% over a couple of years and pay the tax, bite the bullet, and then never ever have to worry about taxes ever probably again.
Yeah, except for dividends and taxable account, but and Social Security, but that's about it.
Right. If he tax manages the account, it would
Yeah,
be minimal,
sure.
right? He can use tax efficient ETFs.
Sure.
Right. So would I do this? The answer is probably no. I would still convert to the 22 or 24 at 46 still. But
I would too, because I think if you I'm guessing what Chuck is just looking at a run that he's paying taxes on a higher balance,
yeah,
right?
and it's because it's a straight line rate of that you love to run because you live it. That's your life, Al.
Everything is very measured.
All right, so he's got a second question
Okay.
here about his asset allocation. He goes, "Today I'm 100% stocks, low cost index funds. I hear you guys tell people in their 30s who have 20 to 30 years until retirement to be in stocks. If my goal is to leave as much possible to my daughters, which God willing will be 30, 40 years from now, shouldn't I be 100% in stocks as well? Really appreciate the spitball. And again, love the show, Chuck." I hear you guys tell people in their 30s who have 20 or 30 years until retirement to be all in stocks. Well, he's got to live off of some of this money,
Yeah.
doesn't he?
Well,
He's
sure.
46. He wants to spend $150,000 a year. Does he still stay all in stocks?
There's no pensions. So here's what happens. So the market does a correction, like the Great Recession, it goes down 50%, and you're still pulling money out. It makes it harder to recover. That's what we would tell you. And here's the other thing that happens is psychologically, maybe Chuck, you're different than most, but most people, when the market has a big decline, they get so nervous that they're losing their nest egg that they sell. And what does that do? That locks in the losses. So there are exceptions. If you're the one out of 100 that can follow this through and just keep staying the course, you're going to probably do better. But most people can't seem to stomach that.
All right, so when you're looking at income strategies in regards to asset allocation, a couple of things that people look at. There's like a bucket strategy, right? So you want to bucket certain safe dollars for a certain amount of years, 3 to 5, 10 years, depending on risk tolerance.
Great.
So let's say he wants to spend $150,000 a year, and you're like, okay, well, if I need to pull $150,000 a year from the portfolio, maybe I want 5 years of safe money. That's $750,000. I divide that into 4.6 million. So maybe he has 16% in bonds or
Right.
safe money and the rest in equities
Right.
just to weather out the storm. If the market drops 20, 30% over a couple of years and you give it 5 years to recover.
Sure.
Another way to look at this is that he wants to spend $150,000 a year and he's all in stocks and he's got 4.6 million. So depending, he's in low cost mutual funds. So I'm guessing total stock market mutual funds.
Look,
Andy,
yeah.
look this up. I don't know it off the top. I'm guessing the dividend yield on a total US stock market fund is a couple percent.
That, yeah, that's usually what
I don't know,
yeah,
two and a half.
maybe somewhere between two and a half, I'm guessing.
All right, so let's go 2.5% there. So that's 115, 120,000. He wants to spend 150. Maybe the dividends almost covers his living expenses.
Maybe so.
So if there's a down year, and usually the dividends will hold even though markets
Yeah,
drop.
didn't hold during COVID.
Well, some stocks won't. They'll cut their dividends,
Yep,
and
yep.
so it really depends. But
Yeah.
the dividend yield on a total U.S. stock market fund, it's not going to go to zero,
Right.
right? There'll still be some income or depending on what that portfolio looks like. So I don't know. There's a couple of different ways that he could look at this.
Yeah.
That's VTI. That's what, 1.4%.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you look at a globally diversified portfolio, it's that we've usually seen around two, maybe a little more.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think that's a good way to look at it. I think to me, I would probably go with the 5 year, 750,000 in safety, just
That's what I would
if
do.
nothing else, just psychologically. But the truth is, I think you could run almost every scenario unless that the market declines and never goes back up, which that's never happened. But anyway, if it's you're going to probably do better long term, 100% stocks, no matter what you do, if you can stay the course.
Sure.
And that's most people can't.
When you see your account balance from 4.6 to 3.2 million,
right?
How eager is he going to be selling some of those securities to pay, you know, take $150,000 out for his income?
It gets harder, right?
It's really difficult to do that.
And then what can happen, now it sounds like, Chuck, this is not your case with your investment strategy, but some people, we've heard of a case where someone had 13 million, but it was highly concentrated.
Oh, that was you.
In a few stocks.
Was it that you?
No.
You wrote in?
It's my brother.
That you wrote in?
And then ended up losing, getting all the way down to about like 2 or 3 million. And that was a life changer.
Well, yeah. Didn't your neighbor kind of blow up?
Well, yeah, that was another case too.
Yeah.
Stock options.
Yeah. And we had someone came in just a week. They had millions in, what was that, snow? In 3 days, stock's down, you know, 40%.
Yeah. Yeah, one that I'm referring to, it was a high-tech company right before the dot-com bust. The stock price went from $180 to $4. So that's why we like concentrated positions. If you're on the right side, I mean, that's how you build wealth.
Right.
But in terms of keeping wealth, you want a globally diversified portfolio because you don't want to be so reliant on one stock.
Yeah, you're at 46, you got 4.6 million. I mean, what's enough?
Yeah. Well, clearly they have the ability to earn money if they need to go back.
Yeah.
So. Because I mean, if it was all in a taxable account, then you would think, okay,
it's
well,
all inherited.
Inherited, or maybe you were lucky with your company, got a whole bunch of equity.
He's got $2 million
in
retirement accounts.
At 46 with all this retirement money, these guys know how to make money and save it.
Yep. We got a Rothaholic. Hello, gang. Love the podcast. Oh, I'm trying to burn some calories. I'll spare you and the listeners the details of my life as I typically get depressed while thinking about my boring life. As the world turns here.
Oh, boy.
Drinking would help, I've been told, but been run over by that lousy sobriety. I can't even say it.
You can't even say the word sobriety.
Sobriety.
You don't want to say it.
Yeah.
Sobriety wagon a decade ago. All right. Well, thank you. Congrats.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Each January, I contribute the max amount after tax to a traditional IRA. And shortly after, do 100% backdoor conversion to the Roth IRA. I don't have any other IRAs, so relatively easy to do the tax reporting. This year, I did the old backdoor Roth conversion January 9th. But 19 days later, want to undo the after-tax Roth conversion because I now believe I'll be taking a lump sum for the pension.
Okay.
So he did... After tax contribution, converts it right away. Everything's hunky dory. Does it in January, which I highly recommend a lot of people do.
Sure.
Because you get the compounding tax free effect of the whole year.
Yeah.
Instead, people usually wait till later in the year. I get it because sometimes this happens.
This happens. So basically, if you don't have any other IRAs, then this works great, right? Because you put the money in, you convert it, none of it's taxable. If you have other money in IRAs, then you've got to do the pro rata rule to figure out how much is taxable. And unfortunately, the IRS looks at the amount of money you have at IRAs at year end, not at the time you do the conversion, but at year end. So the question here is, can he undo it?
So he did a 2024 backdoor Roth conversion of $8,000. Estimated lump sum is $410,000. He's going to roll the 410 into an IRA.
Yep.
So now he has $418,000 in IRAs.
Yep.
Being that the $8,000 was after tax, do I need to factor in the new traditional IRA that Will established? Losing sleep on how to fix this, so I appreciate your spitballing.
Okay, so now with these numbers, The way the IRS is going to look at it is you've got $8,000 of basis and you've got a total IRAs of 418. So roughly 2% ish of your conversion will be tax-free. The rest will be taxable. That's the pro rata and aggregation rules where they figure out how much is taxable.
What'd you say was taxable?
2%, let's say, ish.
No, tax-free. 2% would be tax-free.
Sorry, 2% is tax-free. I said it backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, 98% is taxable.
All right. So $160 is going to be tax-free of the $8,000 convert. But $8,000 was after tax.
Yeah.
So he converted the $8,000 in after-tax dollars. So he never paid tax on the $8,000, though.
Yep. Correct. And if he wasn't going to do a lump sum in the same year, that would work just like he's always done.
But he's thinking, man, I'm losing sleep. And only 2% of that conversion is going to have the after-tax component. But each year, as he's doing conversions,
he'll get another 2%.
He'll get another 2%. He'll finally get the whole 8,000 out at some point.
Yeah.
But you got a pro rat.
Yeah.
Do the pro rata rule on the basis versus the pre-tax lump sum pension.
Now, before the Secure Act 1.0, you could recharacterize a Roth conversion, which was a really nice feature for this problem. Now you can't do that anymore. Once your Roth conversion is made, you can't undo it. You can't recharacterize it. Personally, I wouldn't lose sleep over this. It's just, okay, lesson learned. I'm going to have to pay taxes on almost the whole 8,000, but now you know the rule. And you won't do that again. That's how I look at it. I think life's too short to worry about paying taxes on $8,000.
Yeah. Well, it's the net effect could be a lot less than this if you really want to start playing with the numbers. So he's got $8,000 that he converted. So you take the $8,000, see what that grows to, because you want to convert in the beginning. That's still in the Roth IRA. He's going to have to pay tax on the conversion, but the $8,000 is still in the Roth, right?
Yeah.
So let's say that the market's doing pretty well this year so far, right? So let's say the market does 10%. He's going to make $800 on the $8,000.
Right.
He did the conversion. He's going to have to pay tax on $7,800 because you said he gets 2% free.
Yeah.
98% is going to be taxable. Assuming
That's right.
He's in the 25% tax bracket. I don't know. What's that? $1,800?
Yeah.
So,
but he got money for the Roth.
He got $800 of earnings in the Roth because he converted in January,
right,
versus waiting till December, where he would not add any earnings in the Roth because all of the earnings would have grown in the IRA.
Another way to look at this is the exact same tax and math if you did a Roth conversion from an IRA.
Yeah.
So don't lose sleep over it. You got the money in the Roth. Good job.
Great job. Rothaholic. All right. I want to go to Brian Fontana.
Fantana.
Hey, guys. This is Brian Fantana. Okay. He lives in Washington. We got Brian Fontana. Love the show. Hoping for a little spitball here. Wife 31, yow. Me 33, yow. $200,000 in traditional, $100,000 Roth, $200,000 in income. 135, me, 65, wife. Contribute $40,000 a year to our 401ks. All right. We think we want to live off about $150,000 in retirement, today's dollars. I'd like to hold off on my Social Security till 70, since I'm in a higher income earner, and provide some longevity insurance for my wife. Oh, look at you, Brian. I enjoy my job. I could see myself working into my 60s, but would like to plan to be able to retire at 60. Wife would love to retire tomorrow and move to Hawaii with Big Al. Oh, there you go, Big Al.
Yeah.
If given the opportunity. How are we doing? One kid with another on the way, if that matters. Yes, that matters, sir.
Would you know about that?
Oh, my God. Do I ever.
Does it change your expenses a little, Joe?
It's crazy. It's unbelievable. And then it's like you can't even spend money on yourself anymore without feeling like the guilt.
Yeah, right?
It's like I cannot splurge. Remember when we used to do this segment of like the stupid purchases I would use?
Yeah,
to do?
Yeah. You don't have those anymore.
No.
Golf bag, the Star Wars helmets.
Yeah, $2,000 on a Darth Vader helmet or something stupid like that.
I remember that.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, now it's in a box in the attic.
Right.
And then if I spend like $100 on something, I just feel, oh, God, maybe I should put that in a 529.
Wow. Wait a minute. Are you becoming a dad?
No.
Things have changed.
Yes, I am. But it's,
you are a legitimate dad now.
It's yeah. Anyway, okay. You're on track. I'm sure you ran some numbers, Al.
No, I didn't. All but you're on track. So here's my quick calculation for someone that's young, is your goal is to get up to 20% savings, and you're already there.
Yeah,
saving 40 grand out of 200.
Just wait till that other kid comes along. Forget about it. Dance class, gymnastics.
Try to keep saving 20. But here's what we often happen: you'll save a little bit less for a few years, and then you'll start saving a little bit more and catch up. Blah, blah, blah. But Brian, you're based upon what you just told us, and you're going to work until your 60s. If you told us you want to retire at 41, yeah, you need to be saving 60% or 80%. I don't know, whatever. But yeah, what you told us in broad terms, yeah, I think you're doing the right thing.
Very good. Let's go to Scott from Kansas City, Missouri. I have two siblings and aging parents with a large retirement balance that do not need money. I'm not managing their money. What type of asset allocation I have for them, knowing that most likely the money will get passed on. Currently, they have 50% stocks, 25% bonds, 25% money markets. Okay, this seems about right. Can you give me a little spitball, like a little Coors Light? My wife likes Pinot Grigio. So okay. What do you think? I don't know. Is asset allocation good? I totally forgot his question.
Well, he's got aging parents that don't really need the money. It's probably going to him and his two siblings. He's got an allocation of 50% stocks, 50% bonds and cash. Is that right? Should it be more aggressive? I think that's what he's trying to imply. Should it be more aggressive? Because it's really probably going to be for myself and my two siblings. Now, here's how I would answer it. I think it's about right as is, because you don't know that your parents are not going to need it. So I would rather have some safety here, and maybe a lot of safety, just because as people age, if they need extra care, that can be pretty pricey. I'd want to have safety for that, to cover that. But you still have 50% in stocks if they don't need it, which will help you guys.
Yeah, I'm on board with that.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Scott.
If you haven't been to our website in a while, this would be a good time to check out the podcast show notes for some brand new free financial resources. Our latest blog post will walk you through choosing a qualified financial advisor that meets your needs. If you're a self-employed small business owner, we've got a new guide that will tell you what you need to know before filing your taxes. You can watch our newest tax planning webinar on demand to learn how tax loss and tax gain harvesting, net unrealized appreciation, the Roth conversion, and the backdoor Roth can save you money in taxes. And you can download this week's special offer, the Retirement Lifestyles Guide. Click the link in the description of today's episode in your favorite podcast app to go to the show notes and get immediate access to all these latest free financial resources. Have you shared the show and the resources with anyone lately? It's a good time to do that too.
We got Ricky from Birmingham, Alabama. 68, currently in the process of Roth conversions and managing to stay away from Irma. He wants to stay away from it.
Yeah, Irma equals bad.
Irma's a little bad neighbor. My IRA drawdown and currently 41%. So what is he saying here? 41% of living expenses, 59% of Roth. So that equals 100. So out of his IRA distribution, he's living off of 41% of it and converting 59% of it.
Yeah, I think that's what he's saying.
You think he's an engineer?
Well, it wasn't 59.35.
Yeah, I suppose. Social Security covers all of the income taxes and the rest of my living expenses. What would you advise? Keep doing it this way or let the entire drawdown go to the Roth and use the Roth to pay the rest of the living expenses? Thanks. P.S. Yes, I'm the LSU guy in enemy territory. Oh, yeah. I remember Ricky. Ricky's real fast.
I knew that was coming.
Ricky's real fast.
Yeah, I think that's what you said last time.
Yeah, yep. Ricky Henderson loves talking in third person.
He does, or did. I haven't heard from him in a while.
So I don't think it matters.
It doesn't matter at all. I mean, you're paying the same tax. In other words, whether you put the whole thing in a Roth and pay the tax and then pull some out to pay your living expenses, or you take what you want directly to your brokerage account, and then what you're doing is just fine. I mean, so what could be the difference? I guess
the compounding of the Roth.
Yeah, if the account goes up, then you'll be happy you put it in the Roth because more will be in the Roth. So that could be. If the account goes down, you'll be sorry you did it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't worry about it. Just take what you need in each.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. If do you want to leverage as much money as you can in the Roth, let's say is a high rule of thumb.
Yeah, and the market, based upon the last 100 years, goes up 2 years and down one, if you just look at it that way.
But if he's got more money in the Roth IRA, that's just more shares in the Roth versus taking money from the Roth. I guess I wouldn't want to take any money from the Roth if I didn't necessarily have to, if I'm doing conversions.
Yeah, well, I
Then
mean,
why convert?
right.
If you convert and then the next day take it out, don't convert. Just take
Yeah.
it as a distribution.
What's the difference? I think it's just the time the money's in the Roth, maybe is the question.
Right. Well, if he can live off of the Social Security and take a distribution. So let's just say, in round numbers, $100,000 is what the distribution is. So he's converting 59,000 and living off of 41,000,
Yep.
and then the other whatever dollars that he has in Social Security is paying as taxes and the other living expenses.
Yep.
That's what I would do. Then I would convert the 59,000 and continue to convert and not take any money from the Roth.
Yeah, agreed. But it's kind of same.
I know it's we're splitting hairs.
Yep.
I got Daniel from Whittier,
Whittier.
Whittier. Thank you, Andy. Whittier, California.
You ever been there?
No, never heard of it.
Yep. So,
You?
yeah, it's LA,
North?
near LA. LA.
LA?
Yep.
Like Thousand Oaks?
I'm not sure where it is. I just know it's in LA somewhere.
Got it. Hi, guys, and Andy. Love the show. I always look forward to Al's wisdom and Joe's humor. See, I'm laughable. You're the smart guy. I like to listen to the show while driving in my 2007 Toyota Tacoma. We're on long trips in our motorhome. Ah,
Oh,
that's cool.
nice.
Yeah. 22 Renegade Valencia, which we tow our 16 Jeep Wrangler. Oh, one of those. I wonder
Wow.
that they got a little tire cover that says life is good.
You know, they probably do,
They probably do.
because life is good.
Life is great. Here's our financial history. My wife and I are both retired. We have a combined Roth IRAs of 700,000, IRAs of four. And 100,000 in the bank. So what, $1,000,001, $1,000,002.
Million two. That's right.
Okay, no bills except the utilities. That's it. That's all they have is utilities, Al.
Okay, that's pretty good. They don't they've learned a way not to eat.
Or bathe
They
or
don't need any toiletries. It's
never go
just
out.
they just hang out in the motorhome. Yeah.
yeah.
All right.
And somehow they get free gas along the way.
Got it. House, cars, and motorhome are paid for. This information has nothing to do with my question, but I thought I'd include it. All right. Thank you for that.
Yeah, okay.
All right. We're both collecting our Social Security, which is about 38,000, 32 of it's taxable. I get yearly CalPERS medical pension of $120,000, but only $45,000 taxable. I was hurt on the job and was forced to retire. Oh, sorry to hear that. We also have converted IRA money to the Roth. Yearly so far, about 450,000 over the past 4 years. We both turned 65 years old in September and November of 2024. My question is about Medicare and Irma. I know Irma is based on 2 years prior, so I'll list our incomes. All right, so they converted some money, they got pensions, they got Social Security. Total taxable income was roughly 202. I know this number is close to the top of the lowest bracket of Irma. So, got two questions for you.
Okay.
Does the standard tax deduction get deducted for Irma?
No.
Does my tax-free medical pension get counted for Irma?
No.
All right. There you go. I've tried to research this, but get conflicting answers. Thanks for your help. Lastly, we don't drink. Sorry, Joe. I know you always look forward to that info.
So the whole discussion about open container, it's irrelevant.
Well, for Daniel, but not necessarily for Joe if he wants to get
Oh,
a
you're
motor
relevant.
home.
I don't know. He lives in Whittier. Maybe he comes down to San Diego, picks me up, have a Coors Light in the back.
Then we'll need to know, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I'll answer some more questions on Irma.
Yeah.
All right.
So Irma, it's an income calculation where you figure out how much tax you have to, or not tax, how much you have to pay for Medicare premiums. You look back 2 years and you use your adjusted gross income plus tax-free interest, right? Tax-free interest. So it's no more complicated than that. Daniel, the reason why you got conflicting advice is there's probably 20 different modified adjusted gross income figures for different things, and it's super confusing. I agree with you, but in terms of this one, it's not very complicated. Adjusted gross income plus the tax-free interest, and don't worry about anything else.
We got Elisa from Fremont. Hi, Joan. Big Al. Oh, left on Andy.
Sometimes it happens.
Wow. Continue to enjoy your show. She does. She continues to enjoy it.
I was worried. I'm glad she wrote in to tell us.
I don't know how you continue to enjoy this crap. I really don't. We have excess funds in the California 529 that we would like to roll over to our son's IRA since he did not use all the funds. All right. So they're going to do a little Secure Act.
Okay.
Yeah. 529 jobber.
Brand new.
My husband is shown as owner and son as beneficiary. The rule states it must be 15 years old, which it is. And the contributions and earnings that you transfer must be 5 years old. So since our son graduated in 2019, we have not used money from that account in 4 years, but it has been earning money over the last 4 years. Do we have to wait another year? Would appreciate your input on this. Still driving that Honda Insight and taking care of our Yorkie poodle.
Damn.
I have no idea what the answer is here.
Well, let's recap the rules. So the Secure Act 2.0 allows you to take extra money in a 529 plan and convert it to a Roth IRA with a lot of stipulations.
But you can only put, what, 25,000, something like that?
I think it's 35,000 total. The account must have been open 15 years ago. The last contributions had to be, well, or at least the ones you're converting have to be at least 5 years old. And you can only convert the amount of what a IRA
contribution,
IRA or Roth contribution is, right?
So basically, you're taking the money from the 529 plan, and it's eligible for a contribution. So you're just transferring the 529 plan into a Roth, but there's all these stipulations. You have to have earned income, right?
Yeah, that's the other one. You have to have earned income to be able to do this for like a contribution, but you're doing this instead. So at any rate, I think what it says is that the contributions have to be at least 5 years old. I don't recall it ever said anything about earnings. I think
what contributions? Contributions of the 529?
The original contributions in the plan. So in other words, the plan's at least 15 years old and the last contribution made was at least 5 years ago.
Oh.
That's what it's saying. So I think you're fine. I mean, I don't think it's the earnings, because if it were, you could never get it all converted, because there's always earnings before you convert. So I think you're okay, Alyssa.
Thank you for continuing, Alyssa. Yeah. What else? Are we good?
If you wish, yes.
All right. Yeah. I think I'm good today.
Okay. Great show today, Joe.
Phenomenal show. Way to go, Andy.
Hey,
wonderful.
Well, thank you. Well done, Joe. Thank you for sticking it out for us.
Yes. I'm a little tired.
Yeah, a little.
Yeah, I'm getting my butt kicked here at the office lately. So I've been drinking like Celsius, like no one's business.
That's what's really been kicking your butt. You need to be getting enough sleep, Joe.
Yeah, you're right, because I didn't get enough sleep. And then I got a little one who comes into my bed at 2 o'clock in the morning and says, I want to cuddle for 5 minutes. And it's like,
aww. Oh.
And then you've got a new dog, too.
Yeah. It's
no rest.
It's just a yeah. All right. Well, it's all good.
Yeah. Yep. Cool.
All right. We'll see you guys next week. Thanks for everything. The show's called Your Money Your Wealth.
Introducing me, Motorhome Life, Pinot Grigio versus Pinot Noir, and movies versus documentaries in the derails. So stick around. Your Money, Your Wealth is your podcast. If you enjoy YMYW, do us a favor and tell your friends and leave your honest reviews and ratings for Your Money, Your Wealth in Apple Podcasts and all the other podcast apps that let you do that. We are literally on all of them. And spreading the word helps us reach more listeners like you. Your Money, Your Wealth is presented by Pure Financial Advisors. To really learn how to make the most of your money and your wealth in retirement, you need more than a spitball. Schedule a no-cost, no-obligation, comprehensive financial assessment with the experienced professionals on Join Big Al's team at Pure. Click the free financial assessment banner in the podcast show notes at yourmoneyyourwealth.com or call 888-994-6257 and book yours. Meet in person. person at any of our locations around the country or online right from home. No matter where you are, the Pure team will work with you to create a detailed plan tailored to meet your needs and goals in retirement. Pure Financial Advisors is a registered investment advisor. This show does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. Investors are advised not to rely on any information contained in the broadcast in the process of making a full and informed investment decision.
Andy Last, the wonderful and beautiful host.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful even. Thank you.
We haven't said that in
apparently,
a while.
Apparently your day is going pretty well, Joe.
It's going great. It's going
good. You know, normally, and it varies, but when we do podcasts, you and I are sitting 4 feet from each other and we're looking at Andy on the screen.
Yeah.
But my direction, I can hardly see Joe. I'm just looking at you, Andy. Wow. You're keeping me focused.
And I'm doing hand signals.
You ever think about getting a little Winnebago there, Big Al?
No, I don't have the itch to do that. I'm not opposed to having a little one, but I would fly somewhere. I don't want to drive across the country in a big hotel room that doesn't even fit the road.
Nope.
Not for me.
Okay.
You know, I drive a Tesla Model 3. I don't like big cars. Yeah, motorhome is just would be off the charts.
Yeah. Well, in a motorhome, you got to like clean it out every so often. You got to go do the dumping thing and all. Yeah, no, forget it.
Yeah, there's that too.
My grandparents had a motorhome.
Yep.
I loved it.
Do you dream about doing that now?
I would not drive it.
That's what I'm
because
saying.
Because I would have a roadie. So I'd have my wife drive it and I would sit in the back, watch some TV or something. Can you do that? Can you just kind of chill in like bed while they're driving?
You could if you trust the driver.
I don't know. Open containers? Is that a thing with a motorhome? I'm not really sure.
I don't know.
If you're a rock star, I guarantee it.
The last time I've been in a motorhome is, it's got to be 25 years.
Yeah.
And so my grandfather and my father had open containers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been.
That doesn't mean it's illegal, but.
Well, I don't know. We were driving.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Well, was it in Texas?
No. The person with the open container was sitting in the back of the motorhome.
Okay.
Is that an open container? If it's a motorhome?
I don't know.
I don't know. Do they lock off the cab so that you can't pass your open container to the driver? Not really sure.
You ever been in a limo when people are pounding champagne?
Yeah, but you can't get into the driver.
Oh,
exactly.
The little black little stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
The mirror.
Right.
Pinot.
Pinot Grigio, not Pinot Noir.
What's the difference?
Pinot Grigio is white, sweet, I believe.
And Noir?
Noir is a red.
Wow.
How about that?
Wow. Are you
got schooled on wine.
Yeah, I don't drink wine.
I lived in Australia for a short period of time and was married to an Australian who was really into wine, so I learned a few things.
What is that called? A sommelier?
A sommelier, I believe, is somebody who pours wine.
Yeah, and
that tastes it, that knows it.
Yeah, we learned that on the show.
A sommelier or not? I thought it was a sommelier. Sommelier?
I believe it's sommelier.
Sommelier or sommelier? I don't know.
Well, either way, I'll know what you're talking about.
Okay. Andy Lash, he's our lovely producer.
Yes.
Thank you.
You said that twice today. Yep.
Thanks for counting, Al.
This is part of the show, Al.
It took how many shows for him to say that, Andy?
Well, I think he said it maybe three or four times since we started. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Twice in a show.
Yeah.
Right on.
You must be looking especially pretty today, Andy.
Hopefully that's not the only reason, but...
Yeah, it's very talented, Al. Yeah, man, you're old. You're just sexy.
Well, your first one was The Beautiful.
Oh.
So, if I recall.
A little Anchorman reference.
Yeah.
Is that you, Andy, that does the little parentheses?
Oh. Yes.
That was to help you.
So you sounded like you knew exactly who Brian Fantana was.
Yeah, he's a sports guy, right? Or is he Paul Rudd?
I believe it is Paul Wood. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I can picture it.
Are you a big Anchorman fan?
I've watched it once, but I'm terrible when it comes to movies. I don't remember anything after I've seen it. So that's why I looked it up.
There he is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That is Paul Rudd.
Okay. He lives in Washington. He loves the show. You don't watch movies at all? No movies.
No, I'll watch them and then I promptly forget them.
Oh. When's the last?
Unless it really sticks.
What's the last movie you've
seen? Oh, gosh, I don't know. I watch documentaries more.
Oh. You got something a little juicy on your side of the table here?
Let's see, last movie I saw?
I'm sure it's something really...
Last movie I saw.
Really sappy.
It was called The Irish Wish.
Oh, my God.
With Lindsay Lohan. It was all about Irish, a wish, and a romance.
Oh, I saw that on Netflix.
It's like the number one show on Netflix right now.
I probably just flew right by that.
I can't guarantee you many things. I can guarantee you would not like that movie.
Yeah, we are almost 100%.
What was the last movie you watched?
You know, I'm kind of into a couple of different shows.
Oh yeah.
So I haven't watched a movie lately. I'm into Shogun. So I switched between Shogun and. Like, one of my favorite movies is The Gentleman. Seen that? Guy Ritchie movie?
That one I haven't even heard of.
You know who Guy Ritchie is?
Sure, yeah. He's Australian, isn't he?
No, British. UK. Okay. Married Madonna back in the day.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. So he did the movie The Gentleman. Now it's a series on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
It's awesome. It is, like, so well done. It's really good. So I've been kind of watching Shogun. Depends, like Monday, Tuesday, I'm kind of a Shogun guy. And then Wednesday, Thursday, I go to The Gentleman. And then, Friday, then I act like The Gentleman.
I would say...
drink some cocktails.
Well, okay. I would say more often than not, I'm like Annie. We watch documentaries. It's more educational.
What kind of documentaries are you watching?
I'm usually doing
music and nature.
Yeah, usually for us, actually those two are common ones. Probably nature more than music. But sometimes one about... space or the new telescope, James Webb telescope.
Yeah.
Here's another good one. Tokyo Vice.
Well, all I know is all I know is when you recommend something, I'm pretty sure I won't like it.
Tokyo Vice. You gotta get
So Al and I are gonna start exchanging which documentaries to watch.
Yeah, that'll be more helpful than listening to Joe.
No.
Yeah.
I bet most of our listeners would love Tokyo Vice versus or Shogun, or The Gentleman.
Or The Irish Wish.
No, not The Irish Wish.
So I agree. I agree. I could hardly get the words out of my mouth. But you asked me the question.
Got it.
But documentaries, no. I would say most of our listeners would appreciate documentaries.
Okay.
I'm hoovering up everything I can from David Attenborough right now because he's 96 years old. Who knows how much longer we're going to have his documentaries.
100% agree.
Right on.
Falling asleep.
Well, good for you.
All right.
You watch your crazy... crime-ridden shows where there's murders.
So good. All right.
I live in a happy world.
Yes, I know you do.
Where that doesn't happen.
Yeah.